If it feels like no one understands your problems or cares to listen, if it feels like there is no one else in this world who has gone through what you have, if you feel like you're so close to giving up but still holding on, Cafe with Monica was made for you. I'll show you how to deal with the everyday and not so everyday situations that surface in the lives of millennials. By sharing my experiences and knowledge, I hope to inform, inspire, and provide solutions to problems that may seem out of reach. So grab your coffee or drink of choice and let's just talk about it. Welcome to Cafe with Monica. This is episode 32. I am Monica, your host, a millennial helping millennials to hashtag just talk about it over coffee. In this episode, I have Jessica and we're going to talk about fertility. So stay tuned to the episode. Welcome back to the podcast, you guys. I'm so excited because I have here with me Jess Milanis, host of the Real Talk Women's Health and Fertility podcast. Jess is a corporate boss lady who manages a group of kick-ass women in technology. She's also a dog mom, a wife, and what inspired me about Jess is her openness to share her journey with us, specifically her infertility journey. Jess wants to create a change in the way we talk about women's health, so here she is today to talk a little bit about her journey and just give us some insight about the fertility journey and just wanting to have a baby and just what we can do for ourselves and our bodies. So thank you, Jess, for joining me today.
Well, thank you for having me on. It's my pleasure to be here.
And, you know, I was talking to a family member, and when I told them that I was going to go and check kind of like my fertility levels and everything, they were like, we never did that. Like, that wasn't a thing, you know. For them, it's like they just had babies and they had no problem.
Out they came. Yeah.
Yeah. So now I'm seeing more and more like my friends doing that, checking their fertility levels, kind of doing it in a very holistic way as well, you know, making sure they have the right diet, making sure they're exercising, making sure all of these things, right? Like things that back then it wasn't, you didn't have to worry, I guess, you know, or they didn't worry, you know?
Yeah, for sure. It's, I think that there's, you know, just how do I want to say it? Like there's a new wave of people coming through and trying to get pregnant, like with us millennials, because I'm an older millennial, but I'm technically a millennial. And we want to have all the facts before we jump in. And we also are starting to see and experience miscarriages, struggles with infertilities with our friends and family members. And so I personally love to have a plan of attack and get as much education and have as much knowledge as I possibly can before I have to battle with something, whether it's a health diagnosis or like the coffee machine that was brand new downstairs today that I didn't know how to work. So I think that it's just something that's becoming more common. And the idea of getting off of birth control and looking at different ways to have family planning health, but not necessarily ingesting hormones in our bodies every single day, which can affect our long-term fertility and our long-term health.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm going to kind of backtrack a little bit because I really want to know about you. I want everybody to know a little bit about you, about how you became a fertility coach. I don't think I mentioned that in the introduction, but how did you become a fertility coach? What has been your own personal experience and journey to become a fertility coach?
Sure. So I am in my early 30s. I don't know when this episode is going to air, but we'll say 33 for good measure. And I have been trying to have a baby for over 2.5 years, closer to 3 years now. And I have gone through it all. I've had the ups and downs of, you know, oh, I think this month is my month. And then I had a miscarriage earlier this year. And then I've also had friends and family members get pregnant like it was nothing and feeling the heartbreak of that. And so it was through all that that I realized that there's a space for women that are so under-supported. We don't know how, like, the trials and tribulations that you're going through when you're trying to conceive. And it's such a deeply emotional process. And it can be so triggering for women because they feel like they're not woman enough, or they're doing something wrong, or they'll blame something that they did in their youth, or they'll blame whatever. And it turns into this spiral of shame that can be really hard to get out of. And it can also be a spiral of obsession. How do I maximize my chances of becoming fertile? And I thought, oh, this is a great opportunity for me to step in because I've been where these women have been and I've walked in their shoes. I'm not pregnant yet. I haven't had a baby yet, but I know what it feels like. I have a deep level of empathy because I am them. And I've pulled myself out of that spiral of shame and that spiral of obsession, and I've kind of bootstrapped my own recovery in that. So that's kind of how my story came about and how I decided to become a fertility coach, not as a way to, oh, how can I monetize something? It's really, I want to help women. Like, this is something that we don't talk about. This is something we don't share about. And why not? Why can't I be an advocate for them, and why can't I work with them?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think, you know, the reason why I feel people really don't talk about this is, like you mentioned, some of the words, the feelings of shame, the feelings of, like, my body isn't working for me, like your body is personally giving a big F you to you, you know, like it's not working for me, and you're doing everything that you can, and they're... Also, like growing up, it was like nobody else's business, you know, like it's not, we shouldn't talk about this. Growing up, we, you know, if you couldn't have a baby, it wasn't something that we talked about. I think my mom had a miscarriage and I didn't know about it until probably when I was older. And because there was a lot of shame to it. She didn't want anybody to know. She didn't want even her mom to know because there was this stigma, you know, of, you know, like you did something. It's like you blame yourself. She didn't want people to blame her also. And then there's the other side. Like, it's like, what's going on with your husband? What's going on with your boyfriend, whoever you're having relationships with? Why can't you guys, you know, have a baby? And there's just like, it's just not wanting to have that uncomfortable conversation. But I think when we continue not having those conversations, we continue to stigmatize it, and we continue, people are misinformed. You know,
absolutely. And I think another reason why we don't talk about it often is because it's our quote unquote privates. And we were taught you don't talk about your privates. And, you know, when you take away the shame of what a vagina or a penis is and look at it from a health perspective, like it's a part of your body. And it's not anything to feel shameful about. Now, am I going to walk around flashing it to everybody? No. But like, I do think that we need to recognize that these are anatomical parts of us, and there's no shame to be had in talking about those anatomical parts. And like you were saying too, is there's also the shame of miscarriages. And I was fortunate enough, my mother and I had a very good relationship and conversation. She experienced quite a few miscarriages. I think it was 3 in total. And she's always been very open with me about that. So I've always known, okay, this is just something that I might have to struggle with. And so from a very young age, like maybe even 12, I knew what a miscarriage was, and I knew how common they were, and I knew the emotional impact that they could have on a woman and on a couple. And that kind of gave me a sense of empathy and knowing before I even started my own journey, because I was prepared for something like that to happen to me.
Yeah, and that's scary, you know, being prepared for something like that. Like, I don't think I'd be prepared. I think a lot of people would not feel prepared. You know, I'm glad that your mom was open to you, because it's open to a reality, a scary reality that people don't want to talk about. So I'm glad that she was open enough for you. And also is there with you, supporting you, because you don't feel alone. You know, you don't feel like I'm the only one that this is happening to. Because some of us don't have family members or other people who have have gone through this. And this is when I feel like a fertility coach would be great, because you have somebody, especially with your own personal experience, you have somebody who has gone through this, who is still going through this, and is willing to hold space for you to be able to talk with you about what you can do so you won't feel less alone. And that's a big thing about me in this podcast. I really didn't want people to feel alone. I wanted to share experiences about people that people don't really talk about, because I know how it feels when I've experienced things and feeling like I'm the only one and it's a crazy, unrealistic feeling, but sometimes a lot of women feel like they're the only ones that this has happened to, especially, like I said, they don't have the support or the people that, or they had anybody who's experienced this thing.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, there's so many different levels of infertility too. Like there's the miscarriage, which that actually happens to 1 in 4 women. And you might not even be diagnosed with infertility if you have a miscarriage. And then there's women who have physiological issues. Like me, I have a septum that goes through my uterus, and I have to have surgery before I can conceive, most likely, or keep a pregnancy. Then they also have PCOS, endometriosis. There's male factor infertilities. Like there's so many different levels and layers of things. And it's not just, you know, let's go off and do some baby making in a room. You know, there's also the IUI and IVF, and people are so flippant about just saying, oh, well, you can always do IVF, and or you can adopt, or you can do this, or you can do that, and not really considering the monetary, emotional, or really like spiritual aspects of inserting that into your relationship. You know, IVF per pop is like $14,000. Adopting is about $100,000. Adoption is $100,000. So it's not just something that you can throw out there. And I think that that's another thing that, like, you know, there's this idea that, okay, you go off and you baby make in a room and you do it one time and then you're pregnant. And that's not the case. Yeah. Right. And it's not always the case. It happens. It happens, but it's not always the case. So, you know, it's just this weird space of people not knowing. There's not enough money to really fund the root causes of these infertility diseases and the root causes of these women's health diseases like PCOS and endometriosis. So we just kind of, again, sit in the spiral of shame and obsession and are told to do things flippantly that might actually be counterintuitive or might not even be good for our health. You know, I've heard women who have been told if they have endometriosis, we'll just get pregnant. Well, actually, one of the things that's difficult to do is to get pregnant when you have endometriosis, and it can only make it worse because it's an estrogen-fueled disease. So it's things like that. And it's not only like lay people. It's not you or me or, you know, the average Jane walking on the street. We're talking about OBGYNs. They don't know enough about these diseases.
And that's scary. That's scary when, you know, your own physician doesn't know enough information to give you. And I mean, for me, it's a personal choice for me not to have birth control, not to put anything in my body. For me, it's like, if I have to take medicine, I will, but I choose not to. A lot of people, have different, you know, ways that they handle their body. And that's the thing, like, it's your body, it's your choice. You know, when people tell you, oh, you should do this or you should do that, it's like, you're taking away my choice. Like you're pushing me and pressuring me to do something. Like, it's my choice. And I mean, I don't even want to get to it, like the whole situation with, you know, what was it, Florida? Was it Florida?
No, Georgia.
Georgia.
And Ohio's another one. And I think it's either Alabama. Yeah, I think it's Alabama. Georgia, Alabama, and Ohio have the most restrictive. abortion.
And I was just like, you know, I felt for it. Like, I felt for my friends who have had to. I mean, she had one of my friends, and she'll be on the podcast, and she talks about how she had to have surgery, for, you know, to like for her miscarriage. Like, she had to have surgery, and she was denied also short term and long term disability just because of that. And it was just insane to me that somebody's personal choice would cause them to not have access to things and to be told by other people that they can't do those things. And it's crazy, but I'm not going to get too into that. What I wanted to say is, what are things you may not have understood then in the beginning of your 2 year journey, but that you have learned now that you would like to share with others about fertility or specific procedures or stats that you may know?
Well, so many things. I'll start with like the personal knowledge, and the personal knowledge that I really wish that I had known back then is you were in a period of learning about your body and learning about the basics of physiology, or fertility, and we're not taught that stuff in school. We're in fact taught an abstinence only sex education program. And it's challenging once you become an adult, because all you've heard is, and all you've seen in media is, oh, well, you know, you have sex one time and then you're pregnant. And so you assume that that's going to be what it's going to be like for you. And when it turns out to not be that, then it, like I was saying, you go into that spiral of shame. You go into the obsession of, well, what can I do to make it better? Like, how can I fix myself when there might not be anything wrong with you? And, you know, another statistic that's interesting is if you're under 35, a reproductive endocrinologist, unless if you have a diagnosed women's health issue, a reproductive endocrinologist will not touch you for 1 year. If you're above 35, it takes up to 6 months. And so you have to try for a year or 6 months and keep getting those negative tests and negative tests and negative tests and negative tests. And I personally was very stubborn. I did not go to see a reproductive endocrinologist until I was in my second year, because I thought, oh, well, I can do this. I am a smart woman. I can figure this out. I have all the apps in the world. I got this. And the fact of the matter is that you really do need a partnership of somebody who understands the medical side of it and can provide you options. But you also need to learn about your body. You need to learn about what you're putting in your body, and you need to understand your own cycles and rhythms. One thing, if you read the mass amount of publications or if you trust the apps, is that ovulation is on day 14 every single month. And that's not the case. It's just not the case for every single woman. If you have PCOS, you might have cycles that are like 45 days long. And so your ovulation day, your peak ovulation day when you are most fertile, might not be on day 14. It might be on day 20. And so these apps are really constructed for the average woman. They're not necessarily constructed for you and your physiology. So it's learning your body and learning like, I think this is about the time that I'm ovulating, and confirming that with ovulation prediction kits. You can do basal body temperature. I don't like it, but you can do it. And there's just a whole host of other things that you can do. And so for me, it's what you should really spend that first year doing, in addition to trying, but is really learning about your body and learning about your cycle, your when your peak fertile time is, and not becoming obsessed with it, just looking at it as an information gathering, and almost look at it as a scientist rather than putting all the emotion into it.
Yeah, I feel like I'd probably be just like you when it comes to like, because I'm a perfectionist. I would probably have all the apps and be like, okay, I got this. I can do this. Kind of a little challenge for myself, because I'm very big in achievement, and I mean, having a baby is probably like an achievement for me. But I know that a lot of women, are also waiting longer to have babies. Like, it's just like I was reading, I was reading specifically millennials, we're waiting, we're wanting to get our life right. And I talk a lot about this on the podcast. There's like, there's no perfect time, you know, you're just, you're creating this perfect time, that you're creating this idea of a perfect time to conceive, or to, you know, to start the process of conceiving. But I think, like, why do you think a lot of millennials are waiting? Why do you think, besides the whole, they want to get fit their life together, do you think that that's true, that people just really want to have financially everything ready? And
well, I think it depends. I mean, so for me personally, I waited because my husband and I were not, A, in a financial place, and B, we were not in the physical location that we wanted to be in. We were far away from family. We were in the heart of San Francisco, not the place that I want to raise children. Mm-hmm. Plus, I mean, we were paying an ungodly amount for 700 square feet. It was already tight with two of us and a dog. I couldn't imagine bringing a baby into that. So that was one thing. The second thing I think that is more common for millennials, especially millennials that are my age, is we graduated in the largest recession that there has been. And it's taken a lot of my peers a very long time to get on their feet. And you know, I always feel like I'm looking over my shoulder of, okay, am I going to lose my job? Because I saw what happened to my parents. And then my first job hunting experience in the professional world took like 8 months. And I was qualified for all these positions, but there are so many other qualified applicants. So I think that that's an element as well. And then lastly, I think that people are not meeting their partners as early. You know, I met my husband when I was 26 or 27. And, you know, if I was still living in the Midwest at that time, I would have been an old maid. I would not have been like a young and spry, but I was in Southern California at that time. So there was no question about, you know, my age, and my husband's 7 years older than me. So there was no question about our ages and whatnot. So I think that there's just multi-factor things that are going into delaying trying to get pregnant for so many years. And then also, like, selfishly, I wanted time with my husband. I wanted our relationship to be very strong. I wanted us to have things that memories that we had together as husband and wife before we had kids. Mm-hmm. And we've had that. And that's one of the beautiful things of the past 2 years, is that we've been able to create more and more memories mm-hmm. outside of kids. But I'm ready.
Yeah, you're ready. You're ready, and you're trying. When we got married this February, and I kid you not, like March, we saw family members, and they were like, so when are you guys going to start having kids? I'm like, Jesus, we just got married.
Pump the brakes, yeah. Grandma.
My mom was like, so when are we going to have, when are you going to start having kids? You're like, I'm not going to stay young forever. And I'm like, well, you better take care of your health, because we're waiting, like, just like you, we want to be able to endure our time as a married couple, and that's it. We just want time together, you know. I think that we've seen other friends that, you know, they start having families, and that's great, and that's for them, but for us, we don't feel ready. I don't feel I feel selfish right now. Like, I feel like, yeah. It's my time. I want to build my business. I want to do all these other things. And right now, even though if it happens, it happens, you know, like we've always said, if it happens, it happens. We'll just take how life, you know, if it happens, yeah. But we're not pursuing it, you know, rigorously or anything like that. And when I start, I got mad that month, because I just had people who are not even family started asking me, so when are you going to have kids? So when are you going to have kids? It's a very normalized question, I guess, for people to ask. But sometimes I'm like, what happens to that person who maybe has tried to have kids, and this person's asking, when are you going to have kids? Like, imagine the response of I, you know, I've been trying, I've had this, like, you know, nobody wants to hear that, but that's sometimes the reality. So have you ever experienced that in your personal journey where people were asking things and, you know, it didn't come from a bad place or anything, but you know, it might have hurt, you know? So what kind of questions would people ask that you felt like, okay, you shouldn't have asked me that?
So I personally have no problem being very open with people. Like, that's just the nature of who I am. If you ask me a direct question, I will give you a direct answer. But I do know a lot of people who struggle with that. You know, there's the especially if you're on a second marriage. You know, I heard about a woman the other day. I don't think I talked to her. I think it was just like a common acquaintance that I saw on Instagram. And she shared that she and her first husband had gone through infertility, went through the IVF rounds, everything, and they couldn't get pregnant. And it actually broke them up because of the financial and emotional stress of infertility. And so then she met another man and they got married. And it was like immediately the family started asking, so when are you going to have kids? And basically it was deemed that she had like less than 5% chance of getting pregnant. And just the crushing defeat of, I don't want to go through that again. And I think you're so right. It's a common question to ask. When are you going to have kids? When am I going to see those grandbabies? Like, come on, that's what you do now. You're married. It's okay. And, you know, there's a choice for everybody. Like, you don't necessarily have to have kids, or maybe you don't want to have kids right away. And I wish that that wasn't the standard question of what you ask people as soon as they get married. I wish it was something like, what are your plans as a couple? Like, yeah, what do you want to do right now? And ask that open-ended question so that they can dive into, well, you know, we're really interested in traveling, or we're really interested in starting our own business, or we're interested in having a family. And so things like that. I just wish people showed more empathy and understood that having kids is not right for everyone, and also not available to everyone either.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's just being mindful and aware of, you know, what you're saying. And I know it doesn't come from a bad place. It just comes mm-hmm. from a place of unknowing, and that's just kind of like the standard. Yeah. Like, people get married and now it's like starting to have a family. For my mom, I'm like her oldest. So my sister, she's going to be 15. So she's still got a while before she pops any kids, I hope. And, you know, so she's wanting, you know, for us to have kids. So does my husband, Adam's mom. But we just told them, like, we're not ready. We're not. I mean, I don't know if we're ever going to be ready, but we're not ready. And,
Hello, my fellow millennial. This is Monica. I hope you're enjoying this episode. Quick break here. If you're new or have been an active listener to the podcast, I would love to work with you. I'm a licensed professional counselor in the state of Texas, and I have officially launched my private practice in Dallas, where I provide individual therapy both in person or online if you're in Texas. I work with female millennial entrepreneurs. I work with individuals who are struggling with anxiety, depression, self-esteem, and overall life transitions. I work with the Latinx population, and my sessions are available in Spanish. I know it's hard to just the thought of having somebody, an outsider, inside your life, but if you're feeling like you're not sure if therapy's a right fit for you, I offer a free 15-minute consultation so I can answer all your questions. It's okay to have fear. I've been there, and that's why I would love to help. I'll have a link for the 15-minute consultation on the show notes, or you can also find the link at my Instagram account at Cafe with Monica. So sign up for a free 15-minute consultation. All right, guys, thank you so much for listening, and let's get back to this episode.
There was this conversation, and it was starting to be of comparison of like, well, so-and-so's not having kids, so-and-so's not having kids, so you guys have to have kids. And it's like, well, you don't know if we're not going to have kids. You know, we're not saying that, but like, it's, you know, it's like, you don't have to put that pressure on us, you know, and I think some families do. What I wanted to ask you specifically is, when you started working as a fertility coach, right? And you started getting some clients, maybe. What are some things that you help women with, you know?
Yeah, so I love helping women with their mindset. I'm not a certified nutritionist or like a trainer or anything. I can help guide you towards things that I think are better for you. But because I'm not certified in those things, I don't necessarily want to go down the path of advising you on nutrition and fitness in a dogmatic way. What I love to do is help you walk through the beginning stages of your journey, or maybe even the later stages, wherever you're at, help you create boundaries in your life, hold space for you, be, you know, that friend that understands what you're going through and understands the heartache and, you know, helps you break free from the obsession and from the cycle, because the best way to describe it for those who have not been in it is, at some point in our lives, we've all been obsessed over our weight, right? You know, we've been obsessed about either weighing too little, or you've been obsessed about weighing too much and you've wanted to change your body. And so you read everything, you try these different diets, you try these different workouts, and it becomes the new obsession. And that's what dealing with infertility can be like for so many women. It's the new body shaming of your new decade or your new age range, right? And I really like to step in and say, time out, let's figure out how to not be like this, because you don't have to be. There's a way to be in this period with grace and dignity and compassion for yourself and others, and then also enjoy your life, because your life is meant to be enjoyed. It's not meant to be obsessed over. So that's really what I like to do, is I like to be that space for them and help them create those boundaries and just teach them a different way of how to approach this.
Yeah. Cause I think a lot of the times, it is just mindset. It is training our brain to let go of these obsessive, ruminating thoughts, you know, anxious thoughts, you know. And I always tell people, when you're having this, I think that when people have goals and they're wanting to also get support from a peer that's gone through things or has taught women throughout their journey, I love that. But when I do see, I do also see the mental health side of things, is how this over, you know, 2 years of trying, how this affects your mental health. What I think works for you is that you're open and it feels like you've opened yourself to a community and you're able to have kind of like a way to express yourself in a way that you can get support back when a lot of people don't have that. So when people don't have that support and they're struggling to keep the relationship, I think you mentioned, you know, you had heard of women had been in her second marriage and the first marriage, it brought a toll financially and everything, you know. It's like not ignoring all those things, but also taking care of your mental health, but it's like seeing a therapist. And I've also seen a lot of people who, like, they've gone through therapists and the therapist doesn't understand. So I've always told people, you need to go to somebody that specializes in women's health, who specializes in, you know, women with infertility, to be able to talk about these things, because this particular situation can cause a lot of depression, anxiety, mm-hmm. you know, PTSD.
Obsessive compulsion. I mean, like, there's so many different mental health issues that can be associated with struggling with infertility. And there's not a lot of therapists that specialize in this.
Yeah, I know. I mean, I've seen a lot of therapists who specialize in postpartum, baby blues, everything after pregnancy. Mm-hmm. You know, there's nobody who talks about it, you know, the before, the stress of it all. And yeah, we do need to have more. I'm going to have my friend here, and I think you should definitely listen to her podcast. She's a therapist, and she's gone through her own journey, and she really wants to be that, you know, and become that and get more informed and be an advocate, you know, not only as a therapist, but also an advocate for policies and things that could affect women's yeah. health. And I think women should be more informed also about the political things that are happening, because you want to make sure that you're there in the forefront and speaking up. You know, don't let yeah. others speak for you, you know.
Yeah. Well, and another thing that is interesting too is that or a different angle rather is in the workplace, dealing with infertility in the workplace can be so challenging. If you're going through IVF, you know, you might on average need to be out like 12 times in a month, because it's all very critical. And granted, it won't be full days, but you know, you need to attend these very important appointments. And if you don't, then goodbye, $14,000. And so there's this new push for workplaces to be much more infertility friendly. And I actually am about to have the opportunity to speak with a company, a large national company, to provide education and awareness on what it actually is like to struggle with infertility. And I just think that's a huge step forward, that a large company is saying, you know what, this is an issue. We do need to address this in the workplace, and we need to provide education and support to not only the people that are dealing with infertility, but how do we educate the managers and the coworkers so that they're not looking at this person struggling with a health issue. It's not an elective. It is a health issue. How do we create an environment that doesn't create animosity? And I think that that's such an important turning point in our society. And that's another thing that I'm looking at. How do I do that? How do I get into these companies and start advocating at a corporate level too? Because once the corporate levels are changed, then I think the next step is law.
Yeah. Yeah. I think so too, because I think, you're educating these people to be more empathetic about the situation and make it aware that this is a health issue. This is not something that you chose. This is not you trying to not show up at work. This is your life. And part of when you have a good work environment, and people are supportive, you're going to show more effort and be 100% into your job and, you know, perform better when you're feeling supported versus you're in a toxic work environment who's not providing yep. the accommodations that you need, such as the leave that you need or anything like that. I mean, it's a joke how much leave they give women who get pregnant. So, I mean, that's another whole issue. But, yeah, I think it's important that there has to be space for that too. There has to be space for people to not think badly about women who have health issues, who are addressing them and who are may needing to have some time off. You know, they should be aware of what's going on. And so that, like you said, they could be more empathetic about things. And also, so I wanted to, now that we're in like, you know, support, how are friends and family, maybe coworkers, how can they support someone who may be going through fertility stress?
So the first thing is, excuse me, understanding that they might want to isolate.
Okay.
You know, it can be really hard to be at a family event and see a baby or see a pregnant person, or be at a friend event or a baby shower or something like that and see friends who got pregnant with ease. That can be a big struggle. Know that it's not necessarily something to do with you personally. Know that it's actually a shameful moment for them that they'll never share with anybody else, and except for maybe their friends on the internet that are going through the same thing. Like that's just the kind of the dynamics of trying to conceive. So first thing, understand that they might need to isolate. They might not come to all your baby showers, your bridal showers, events if there's pregnant women or women who got pregnant with ease and now have babies. That can be a big trigger. Another thing is help them plan things that are fun that they enjoyed before trying to conceive, and really help them. How do I want to say this? So, you know, when you're trying to conceive, you're always planning your life 9 months out. And then 9 months. And that cycle repeats every single month. And you don't want to make any plans beyond 9 months because you're like, well, maybe I'll have a baby or maybe I'll be too pregnant or whatever. And it's really taking back your schedule, taking back your time. And so as a friend, family member, or coworker, you know, helping them to plan things beyond those 9 months that they can get excited about. And you know what? If they don't or aren't able to make it, no big deal. Don't. Everybody's happy because there's a baby. But excuse me. But things like that, other things that you can do to support, just like be a listening ear. You don't necessarily have to fix them. You don't have to do anything, but be a listening ear. They're going through so much stress. They're learning so much about their body. They're learning so much about their cycle that they've never learned before. And it can be such a struggle. I mean, it is such a struggle. So I really think that really that's the three pillars, you know, allow them to isolate and lick their own wounds when they need to, help them plan things beyond the 9 months or help them plan things even tomorrow, next week, or next month that they really enjoy and that they enjoyed before trying to conceive. And then lastly, being a listening ear and holding space and understanding that you don't need to fix them. You just need to be there to love and support on them.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. I love it. Thank you so much. Because sometimes a lot of people just don't know what to do. Sometimes they avoid. I feel like a lot of people avoid things because it's like, I don't have to deal with it if I don't deal with it, so I'm just going to ignore it. But I feel like that's a lot more hurtful for somebody who may need you. But I also like the fact that you said to allow them to isolate themselves when it comes to, you know, they might not, it's nothing about you if they don't come to your baby shower. It's just they don't want to be triggered. You know, just allow them to do that and like just respect that they're going through something and that it's nothing, you know, it's not personal, right? So I really do like all those little tips. So thank you so much for that. One of the last things that I want to ask you, and it's something that I ask everybody who comes into the show, is what topic do you wish people would just talk about more? And it could be this topic if you want, but if there's something specific that you wish people would talk about more.
I would say women's health. One of my favorite soapbox topics is obviously women's health, but I think that we really undervalue it as a society because without women being healthy, life does not continue. Life ceases to exist. So I think that's something that we need to talk about more. There needs to be more funding. There needs to be more conversation around it because it's just it's so vital to humankind, and we treat it with disdain, secrecy, and disgust, really. And we create all these euphemisms around our period. It's our period. It's our menstrual cycle. Let's not call it Aunt Flo. Let's not call it Shark Week. Like, let's call it what it is, because at the end of the day, when you do that stuff, you're just lessening its value.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. So if people want to get in touch with you, check you out, where can we find you? So plug yourself right here.
I will plug myself all the way in. Okay, so first thing, I am on Instagram all the time. You can find me at Jess Milanes, JessMilanes on Instagram. You can also find me under the same name on Facebook. I have my website, my name again, www.jessmilanes.com. And then lastly, I too have a podcast called Real Talk, Women's Health and Fertility. And on that podcast, it's kind of a combination where I do some solo episodes to provide updates and kind of coach myself through my process. And then also I interview women from all over the world who struggle with health issues or health, women's health experts. So lots of great information on there. I love it. You should definitely come check it out. And I think I will be able to provide all you these links so they can be in the show notes.
Yes, yes. All the links will be on the show notes on the website. Are you still doing your Facebook group?
I am. You know, I'm not as active in there as I really should be. That's something now that I've handed off a couple of things that I'm going to pick back up again.
Yeah, it's okay. I wanted to do everything all at once and I just had to slow my roll.
It's hard when you're by yourself.
Yeah. Well, Jess, thank you so much for joining me today. Thanks for listening to Cafe with Monica. This was made for you. So be sure to visit cafewithmonica.com to access the show notes where I write tips and additional resources for this episode in a location convenient for you. And if you love this episode and found value and can't wait to hear more, go ahead and subscribe, rate, and review it on iTunes. It would mean the world to me. I can't wait for you to listen to the next episode. So see you guys next time.